while the Lord Chancellor of England counted himself fortunate to have known him. Hard work, talent, and no small share of luck would take Charles Hutton out of the pit to international fame, wealth, admiration, and happiness. The pit boy turned professor would become one of the most revered British scientists of his day. This book is his incredible story. Newcastle-upon-Tyne occupies a fine site for a town, a long south-facing slope down towards the river. The Great North Road runs through it, 90 miles north to Edinburgh, 250 south to London, and the river joins the town to the world. As the old song goes, "Tyne River, running rough or smooth, brings bread to me and mine. Of all the rivers, north or south, there's none like Cawley Tyne." By the time Cawley Tyne passes under the bridge at Newcastle, it has seen the Pennines and the wild country of Northumbria, land fought over by the Romans and the Picts, the English and the Scots. If the water had once been dyed with their blood, by now it was dyed with coal. The town was spacious and populous. Only three English towns were bigger, but still Newcastle was no sprawl early in the 18th century. Just five main streets within the old town walls, and open country beyond them to east and west. We know next to nothing about Charles Hutton's parents, Eleanor and Henry. It's probable they moved to prosperous, growing Newcastle from elsewhere, possibly from Westmorland on the other side of the Pennines. Eleanor and Henry seem not to have prospered in any tremendous way in Newcastle, though neither were they at the bottom of the heap. Henry was a viewer in the collieries, something less, that is, than a land steward or estate agent, and something more than a manual labourer. Viewers were literate, numerate men who kept the collieries' records and compared notes with their colleagues at neighbouring mines. They measured and calculated rates of production, kept an eye on how fast the pit was filling with water and how well the pumps were coping. They allocated labour, planned, inspected. Some stayed up at night to catch coal thieves. Viewers were expected to be down the pits daily, but also to see the estate agent daily. They faced two very different worlds, the wealthy owners and the men who hewed the black diamonds out of the rock beneath their feet. They had responsibility and power. Some abused it, keeping owners ignorant about the mine work. Many used their position to command high fees. The coal industry was expanding, and new shafts and new mines depended on the advice of experienced colliery viewers. High-end viewers had their own assistants and apprentices, minor deities in their own field. One source says Henry Hutton was a land steward for Lord Ravenscroft, a step further up still. We don't know if it was true, and it may just be a garbled reflection of the fact that he oversaw a mine or mines on that nobleman's land in Northumberland. Either way, he was a man who had a good deal more than the very minimum. By 1737, Eleanor and Henry lived with their children, three or four boys, perhaps more, in a thatched cottage on the northern edge of Newcastle. 19th-century historians would be rather sniffy about this low dwelling, low probably both literally and metaphorically, but compared with the cottages of the miners themselves, it was luxury. Thatch indeed was a luxury, as was the ability to live more than a stone's throw from the pit mouth. Just as Henry Hutton worked at, was, the interface between landowner and manual workers, his house stood on the edge in more than one sense. Sidegate, their street, was one of the first to burst out of the still intact medieval town walls.